In Ontario, our local real estate boards and regulator have rules to keep us agents in line. Most of us don't need to know the rules because we run good, honest businesses. Businesses where we make sure our clients and everyone else we deal with are treated properly. However, like any business, there are some who cross the line, and when they do, it's the public who suffers. I'm Desmond Brown, and today on Sold in the Six, it's our latest episode of Naughty Agent. It's where we look at cases and disciplinary action taken against agents that have made it to our regulator, the Real Estate Council of Ontario. We also call it RECO. I usually do Naughty Agent with my team member, Jennifer Scaife, but because of illness, she can't make it today. So I have a special guest filling in, my producer, Doug Downs. Doug, welcome to Sold in the Six.
Excited to be back, Des. I love these.
I know you do. I know you love these. And I'm really excited to have you.
I'm a voyeur at heart, so if somebody's behaving badly, or you know, no one's gotten big time hurt, I love to look at this stuff.
So. Yeah, and I think it's going to be really cool to have you because you are not a real estate agent.
No,
you would be a member of the public, and I'm always curious as to what someone like you might think after hearing some of these cases.
My recommendation for fines will start at $1 million and work their way up. I think it's time we clamp down.
Yeah, me too. Okay, you better start getting your license out there. And Doug's joining us from Calgary today.
Right, right.
Okay, so Doug, let's take a look at case number one. So a member of the public puts an ad in Kijiji saying that she's looking for a place to live, a place to rent. So a real estate agent sees the ad, contacts the person, and offers to represent her. In the end, this woman is the complainant. So the real estate agent offers this, look, I'll help find you a place.
Yep.
And the way it works, as agents, we have access to some rentals that are on our MLS system. Okay, and when we do find a place for someone, we get compensated a half month's rent. So if it's in this case we're going to be talking about, the rent is $2,150 per month.
Okay.
We'll get half of that, so just over $1,000.
Okay. Yeah.
$1,075 for that. So this person agrees to meet the agent, and the agent sets up a few rental properties to show her through our MLS system. So the agent, through the whole process, is also in contact with this potential renter through phone calls and text messages. And while in communication with the woman, the agent makes several sexually suggestive remarks to her.
Hmm.
Ah, I mean, this geez. Is thrown in the case. We don't get into how deep this was, but it's enough to kind of like make your stomach turn anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So now the agent charges the woman $700. Now, we're not supposed to charge people anything, okay? But the agent charges the woman $700 in exchange for strengthening her rental application. So what he advises her to do is create a false job letter, produce false pay stubs.
Oh, boy.
And he also advises her on how to update her job information to falsify her credit score. Isn't this a beauty of an agent to work with,
eh? Yeah, yeah.
So, we're not over yet.
All right.
This is just the beginning.
Okay.
So, they go out and they look at properties and they find one. And the woman puts in an offer with the first and last month's deposit. So, like I said, in this case, the rent was $2,150. So, the first and last deposit was $4,300. So, they submit the offer with the deposit. And they also submit all of the falsified information.
Mm-hmm.
They send it on to the listing agent, who is representing the landlord. It's all accepted. And the tenant is scheduled to move in, let's say, like on the date February 25th. And on that date, She is supposed to supply the landlord with post-dated checks so she can receive her keys to the unit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So closing comes up this February 25th, and unfortunately, the tenant is out of town, so can't be there to give the post-dated checks to get her key to move into the unit. So she arranges for a friend to do that. So the friend bypasses her agent and calls the listing agent and says, I'm going to meet you for the unit, and when can we meet? So they set up a time to meet. When the person or the friend shows up and meets the listing agent says, are you such and such? And he says, no, I'm doing this for my friend. He says, I can't give you the keys.
Right.
We don't know who you are. And plus,
right,
we don't
makes
have a power.
Sense.
Yeah, Rick. And we don't have a power of attorney from this potential tenant or, you know, who finished off the deal with us. And the person who was there for the tenant did not show up with the post-dated checks that was required in this deal.
Okay, right.
So, of course, the listing agent turns the friend away and contacts the agent who was supposedly representing this tenant.
Right.
Okay, and says, what the heck's going on here? This person shows up. You didn't tell me anything about this. There's no power of attorney. I can't give this person the key. And there were no post-dated checks. So the agent says, no problem. Can you give me a couple of days on this? I'd like to amend the agreement a couple more days so I could get all the checks together. And, we'll present it to you and there'll be no problem at all. No. Speaks to his client. The client says, no, we are not.
Right.
We are not going to extend this. We're not going to amend this agreement. The deal is now null and void. Okay, so the deal's dead. Meanwhile, the tenant returns from out of town, and she thinks that she has a place to live.
Oh, boy. Now she has nowhere to go.
Yeah, she has nowhere to go. So she gets back into town, has to rent a hotel.
Her friend should have told her, though. Her friend should have, hey, I couldn't close the deal. Her friend should have told her, one that was supposed to bring the checks.
So lack of communication.
Big time.
All around here. Yeah.
Yeah, time. Yeah.
So she asks the agent, she says, what happened? And her agent tells her, I'm not sure. Maybe you should contact the landlord's agent. Okay, so this is his client. He's telling his client to go and contact the other
agent.
That's
his job. That is precisely his function here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And anyway, the woman files a complaint with RICO. And she also tells the agent who is representing her that she has filed a complaint with RICO and she wants her $700 back at least. And he says, yeah, sure. He says, sure, you can have the money back, but only if you sign this letter. And the letter that he gives her says something to the effect of, dear to whomever it may concern, I release my agent from any wrongdoing related to the allegations detailed in the RICO complaint.
Mm-hmm.
So she feels she's under duress to get her money back, so she signs it.
Right.
Gets her money back, then she files an additional complaint with RICO against her agent about the latest shenanigans. So are you really happy with the space that you're living with at home? But you need a new kitchen, a new bathroom, maybe finish off the basement that you've been planning on doing for years? Well, I suggest that you get in touch with Outstanding Construction. Outstanding Construction can help you with all of your renovation needs. They'll give you lots of great ideas, and all you have to do is get in touch with them. So visit their website, outstandingconstruction.ca, or give them an email at info@outstandingconstruction.ca. You won't be disappointed.
Okay, so to recapture, is there more to this one, or does he do more?
Basically, he's found guilty of violating all kinds of sections of our code of ethics and providing false documents and so on. And I'll tell you about
the
sign
$700
later,
collection sounds like that is against the rules outlined by RICO.
Yes.
Also, the falsified information, there's a major ethical infraction there. That I think RICO would take that particularly, both would be very serious. The sexual innuendo, boy, that's, I don't want to say too much other than it's a shame that she stayed with him. It's a shame she didn't. And that can be hard. It can be hard to recognize it for what it is and call it out for what it is at the time. But she stayed in business with him through that period. So I don't know how to calculate that.
Well, sure. And, you know, maybe she was looking elsewhere for units to live in as well, or had other agents helping her along the way. We don't know if she was signed to an agreement with him or whatever. Right. But yeah, for some reason,
did she give him the 700 before or after this?
I'm not sure. It doesn't lay it out here in the complaint.
Right, right, sure. I think this one's going to be fairly hefty. I think you're up in that $40,000 or $50,000 range. Like I think this is a major, major infraction by this agent.
Yeah, collecting
this money.
I would agree with you.
Yeah.
That's the type of fine that I would levy, and I would revoke the license. And, you know, the other disturbing part of this is, you know, what about the landlord? You know, you're trying to get a good tenant for your property. You're going through real estate agents because real estate agents are supposed to be ethical and professional and to do all of their due diligence to make sure that the new tenant that you are going to be putting in your unit is actually legit.
The landlord has lost at least a month's rent here.
Yeah,
so
at least a month's
21,
rent.
Whatever the rent was, 21, 2200. It's a $2,000 hit to the landlord.
Yeah, exactly. And then, put it back on the market and go through the whole process again. Well, anyway, the fine, Doug, was $30,000. And, you know, when you consider it's going to be a half month commission on this, like a half month's rent commission on this of $1,075, it's a pretty hefty fine for
it's a little light,
the type of
this
money
is
you're
all,
going to be.
And it's all pre-calculated. It's all. I see an MO here. I see a modus operandi that I'm not going to say the agent has operated before, but it sounds like they knew what they were doing and had a plan going into this. And typically that means this isn't the first time they've done this kind of thing.
No,
it's the
it's
first
not.
Time they've been caught. So
it's the first time they've caught. It's usually the case with almost every crime, isn't it?
I would say on RICO, this one's a little light. A little light.
Yeah.
Should have been heavier.
I would say it's a little light. Now, as an agent, that's me, who deals with a lot of leases as well, when I represent my landlord, I make sure that when an employment letter comes in and the references are stated, we call them, we double check. And it has happened, Doug, where I've called an employer for a potential tenant who was brought to me from another agent, and they had no idea who the person was. It was a falsified document as well, a falsified employment letter, and we caught it. And we also do our own credit checks as well, just to be sure. But when I told this other agent, I said, by the way, your client does not work at this place where she says she works. He was shocked because the client came to him through a referral from an old client as well. Mm. So he was shocked, and he says, Desmond, thanks very much for telling me. That's it. I've dropped her, and I'm so sorry for the inconvenience, and please send your apologies to, you know, your client as well.
I think, you know, I don't know about falsifying. I worked here, but I didn't really. But I think torquing and stretching on resumes and letters like this, I think it's exceptionally common these days. I think it's all built up a lot.
I have to agree with you. Yeah, it really
is. Like degrees that aren't there at all. People claiming they have university degrees and awards that they say they won. Yeah, all that stuff. I think gets and I think it gets excused, or the excuse you make up for yourself is, well, I'm competing against all these others who are also falsifying their resumes and their background history. So I'm a hero. I must also twist mine just a little bit because I know I'm capable of it. I think that's the excuse people make. So
I know there's always an excuse. There's always an excuse.
RICO needed
needed
tougher boxing gloves on this one.
I think so too.
They needed a bigger hammer.
Yeah, and Buff, I wish they would. I wish they'd come down a lot harder on these agents. Anyway,
I guess I don't know the particulars. about the agent too. There could be more to the story that I'm not aware of, that a $30,000 hit for this agent is significant and will take a long time to pay back. I don't know, but in general, it sounds a tad on the light side.
Yeah. And the other thing though, is that, you know, this agent can't be that busy doing sales, because if they're responding $1,000
is not a big payday.
Yeah. Responding to a Kijiji ad for somebody looking for a place to rent.
Yeah.
You know,
like this, not to be callous, but $1,000 for a successful agent is a good day's work. It's a day's worth to me.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
And there are lots of people who would love to make $500 a day. I'm not downplaying that.
Yeah, no, so true. But then when you take a look at it too, when it comes to leases take a lot of work. You know, finding, especially in this market, where the rental vacancy rate is so low.
Yeah.
It's so low. So to actually finally find something and get an offer in for one of your clients is quite an accomplishment. And then after you do that, then you've got to go through all the due diligence and everything else and the calls and
work.
So on.
Yeah. A lot of work.
Yeah, it is. It is a lot of work for the money that you get. And I know some people out there saying, I'd like to make your money, but still it is. It does take a little bit more than selling a house, believe it or not.
Yeah, no, I don't think $1,000 is a big payday. That's...
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Anyway, here we go. The public, this woman, not looked after very well. And, you know... Again, an agent that who knows what he was thinking, you know.
I hope she's all right. A, found a place to live, and the whole sexual inappropriateness. I hope she's fine through that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Okay, so that's the first one, Doug. Okay. Not a bad one to get going into it, and you know,
in our environment
right now, like I said, as agents, we're doing a lot of leases, and. Like people hire us because they trust us and we're professional.
Yep.
And this type of behavior is ridiculous. Absolutely.
Rogue.
Yeah. Okay. Second case we have here. So an agent has a property listed for sale and finds the buyer for it as well. So we call this double ending. This agent represented both the buyer and the seller. So in the agreement of purchase and sale, there are two conditions. The first one's a condition on financing and the second is a condition on a home inspection. So the financing condition is fulfilled and the buyer also has the home inspector go through. And after the inspection is completed, the buyer is satisfied that, the property's good and waives that condition as well. So now we have a firm and binding deal. Closing date comes, the new owner moves in and finds out that there are significant electrical issues. So the new owner brings in the Electrical Safety Authority, which we also call the ESA, and the inspector finds that there are several violations of the Ontario Electrical Safety Code that need to be corrected immediately. This is an urgent matter now because these concerns pose a significant safety risk. So, in short, to rectify all of this, the new owner has it done, and it costs them $8,000 to have the electrical fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there were some problems with plumbing, and they had to have that fixed as well. So it cost them, it didn't say in the case how much more it cost, but it did cost them some extra money. Now, my first thing is like, why didn't the home inspector find these problems?
Right, and they always have that clause in their contract. If there is stuff wrong here, you don't blame me. I've just done the best I can. They always have that clause in their contract, though.
I know they do. But I guess maybe I'm spoiled because the home inspectors that I use, and we had John Tacoberry on this podcast as well, they are excellent.
If it's a big deal,
they're excellent. If
like a major electrical problem, they'll typically find it.
Yeah, they'll flag it and say, here, have ESA investigate further or have an electrician investigate further. I can't give you a complete opinion on this, but I see there are some red flags here. Yeah. There's some double wiring to circuits or whatever, right? And I've had that happen. So anyway, the house that was bought here was also renovated. But they found out later that the renovations I guess it included the electrical, were all done without permits. So take a step back now. When the agent signed the listing, she had the seller fill out and sign what we call the Seller Property Information Statement, an SPIS. And in that SPIS, the seller disclosed that the renovations of her home were, in fact, done without permits.
Gotcha.
Okay, cool. So it's all disclosed. The seller was not hiding anything.
Right.
But the agent ended up hiding it because when the agent had a chance to double end this property, which she did not give the buyer a copy of the SPIS, which showed and disclosed that the renovations were done without permits.
And is there an expressed requirement that the SPIS is provided to the purchaser?
No. It's filled out, yes.
If it's filled out, yes.
A lot of us do not use SPISs.
Mm-hmm.
For our sellers, because people end up going in and the potential buyers will go and bring in their own home inspectors, right? We will disclose defects,
right,
as well. And it's usually either verbally or sometimes it's disclosed on paper or in emails and so on. Yes, we're aware of this and so on. But generally speaking, the use of the SPIS in the Toronto market is very, very minimal. I know a couple of companies that do it. But my company, most of the agents I work with in my company don't do it. Mm-hmm. Most of the agents in my markets do not use them as well. So anyway, the buyer, the new owner of the house, files a complaint with RICO, and it ends up being obviously successful. And the agent is fined.
Okay.
So what would you do in this?
Well,
what type of fine would you levy?
As judge and jury here for the episode, I find I'm in the position where I do need to ask some clarifying questions before I hand down my sentence. The practice of disclosure of the SPIS, it sounds like it's a good to do, but not a must to do. In this case, the agent understood that electrical work and plumbing work was not done with certification and therefore may not be to code.
That's right. Yeah, because when you have permits for a renovation, there are different permits. There's a plumbing permit. There's an electrical permit. And then an inspector comes in after the work is complete to make sure that it's done properly.
So what would compel the agent is aware of, in the case of plumbing, the potential for substantial damage to the house, and in the case of electrical, the potential for life-threatening damage. Right. If something is not done to code, it's extremely serious. And the most common cause of house fires by a mile is bad electrical. What compels the agent who is aware of this to disclose this to the purchaser? What is in place in Ontario to compel the agent and force them to disclose it? Nothing?
The rule, no. If an SPIS is filled out by a seller, it must be disclosed to potential buyers.
Okay.
That simple.
Okay.
Right? Now, I'm not sure, did the SPIS say that detail the plumbing and detail the electrical? I don't know.
But it mentioned we didn't do the renovations.
We didn't do the renovation.
Okay, so this is the infraction.
That would be a red flag.
The infraction, therefore, is that the SPIS was not disclosed to the purchaser. That is an infraction.
That's right.
See, now, morally, I think the hammer should come down hard, but as a judge and jury, because it is an infraction, which an agent could claim to be an oversight, which could happen.
Yeah.
I'm lesser. I'm down in that 15,000 range. But morally, I'm up higher, significantly higher.
Yeah. Okay. So realistically, you're right. Like the fine was $12,000.
Okay. Okay.
But what you said, there is something about what you said here. I think maybe the because there was a home inspection clause, right, that the agent figured, okay, if there's anything, you know,
yep.
that isn't right with the property, it's going to come out in the home inspection, but it still doesn't, you know, cover the fact that it was already disclosed by the seller that the renovations were done without a permit.
Double checks.
And they did not pass that information on.
A home inspector can't be held liable for what they don't discover. They're just an incompetent home inspector, that's
yeah,
all.
Yeah, exactly. And if you need a home inspector, anybody out there listening, I have
a
couple of great home inspectors. I have a couple of great ones, John Tacoveri and a couple of others that are fantastic. Just fantastic.
Gotta go with the good ones.
And they will not leave you. They will not leave you.
Yeah, get a referral. Yeah, get a referral for a good one. Obviously, there's bad home inspectors that, well, I don't know all the ins and outs here, but if it's a major electrical infraction, things substantially not to code, you would hope that a home
inspector. They should be able to see
I get
it.
They can't dig into the walls, right? They can't. They can't evaporate into my walls and look at the pipes and look at the wiring, but. Yeah.
You know, there are ways that, you know, there are ways that I've had these home inspectors uncover, you know, extensive knob and tube in properties without opening up
the
walls.
So let me ask a question. So you have people who bought a home and had to spend, was it $8,000 to get all the fixes done?
$8,000 just for the electrical.
Just for the electrical, and then who knows on the plumbing. You have a $12,000 penalty. Where does that $12,000 go? Because, sorry, as Joe Public here, I'd kind of like to see it go to the homeowner.
Does it go to the Widows and Orphans Fund?
Where does it go? Does it go to RICO?
I know. It goes to RICO.
What does RICO do with the money? Is this CEO bonus pay or something? It runs their operations, obviously.
It goes towards their high rent or their high mortgage costs for their building.
Right. You can see where I'm going, though, as Joe Public here.
Yeah, I know. I do get it. Yeah, but it should actually go back to the person who suffered the loss. But who knows? Maybe this buyer went another step and went for a claim in the courts.
It could be a civil.
We don't know, but this is not outlined in the RICO case.
Someone wanted to get the names here, we're not going to offer names.
Oh, yeah.
They can get the names.
They're all there. Yep. You go to the RICO website and the names of all of the names of the agents are in there, not of the complainants.
And there's a link in the show notes. I'm just saying.
I know. Yeah. I know. And I've seen some of my colleagues. I've seen people I know actually in these cases. So I just don't want my name in there. And I'm doing my best not to do that.
Yes.
I don't operate like that anyway, so I don't have anything to worry
about. Well, there's one agent not going to Mexico for a holiday.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Doug, we have time just for a really fast one here. And this one here, I don't know where to go with this one. I'm not really sure what the agent was thinking, but it's a serious case, and I'm just very curious about it. So all I can think of is that it has to do with a fraud. So there's a property listed on the MLS. And an agent sees this property listed on the MLS and then puts an offer together on the property, so an agreement of purchase and sale, firm deal, because it's a phony agreement, and he falsifies the seller's signatures on the agreement. So, I mean, through DocuSign, they could possibly do that or whatever, but he falsifies the signatures for the buyer and the seller, or on behalf of the buyer. But what came out here was that the seller's signature and the agent's signature on the agreement of purchase and sale were falsified. Okay? So then they submit the agreement for financing to a lender. Right? So the appraiser representing the lender contacts the listing agent and says, yes, I'd like to get into the property for the appraisal to make sure that it appraises out to the value that the property sold for in the agreement of purchase and sale. And the listing agent says, what? We didn't sell this property. Who is this buyer?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, exactly. It is a wow. So obviously they're all shocked about this on the seller side. and a complaint is filed, and there's obviously it's very easy to track down who the agent was, and the agent, in the end, is fined $20,000 for putting together this false agreement of purchase and sale. So the thing was, with this RICO case, it didn't outline much more, so it just leaves us here to discuss it. But I'm thinking, this is obviously a fraud. It is a fraud in some way. Here, I'm trying to figure out how they would end up with the funds.
Yeah, because you've done that great story about underworld activity, selling homes.
That's right, with John Lancaster.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's some scheme like that going on, but it's an agent who's doing it. It's only $20,000, eh? Because I'm wondering about revocation of license here.
It should. They should definitely kick this agent out. They should put him in jail.
It seems like it.
It all seems as if it's going to be fraud, because what's going to happen now on closing date? Is he going to, again, falsify information on closing date that he is the actual seller of the property and get the funds transferred into his account or into his buyer's account, who he's obviously in bed with on this?
I'm also wondering if there are health issues going on here.
In what way?
You mean mental health issues. If someone's not...
Well, people can always turn to that when agents do such stupid things.
Well, how do you get away with this? Like, what is the game? You're trying to siphon funds out somehow. You're trying to I was brought to the Lancaster series, mm-hmm. where the underworld was actually taking the money.
Yeah, I think
they were selling a property and getting paid by the purchaser, mm-hmm. right? And they were taking the money, pretending to be the homeowner, and they weren't the homeowner.
Exactly. You know what? I'm thinking that this is just the beginning of a bigger fraud. Like, it's the beginning, starting with the agreement of purchase and sale, getting everything into place. And then the next step was going to be falsifying information as to who they were when it came to the closing date.
Wow.
For somehow they were going to try to pull that off and get all of the proceeds of the mortgage transferred into their accounts and run away with it.
If that's a deliberate plan, you're right. Then prison
and
revocation of license.
I really do think so. This is one to watch. I'm going to take a look at this one and try to keep an eye on it. But yeah, it's actually disturbing.
Yeah. And these, you know, again, these are the exceptions. The majority of agents, any agent I've ever worked with, I've become good friends with. And easy to do, right? So,
mm-hmm.
But these are...
I have many clients who are friends.
Good that, even though I said RICO, I didn't think had a big enough hammer in the first case. At least there is a RICO in place that has a hammer.
Yeah, and from what I'm hearing, you know, the regulations in Ontario are very strict.
Good.
You know, I've spoken to agents across the country, and we're pretty good here. We're not perfect in Ontario, but we do a pretty good job keeping things under control.
Yep, good. Good, as it should be, because someone who buys and sells, I expect it. I expect the highest ethical representation possible.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so glad that you could fill in for Jen today, because like I said, it's always nice to have a member of the public hear cases like this and just to get their feelings and reactions about it. And it is quite appalling to you, isn't it?
Well, I hope I represented impossibly high expectations of agents appropriately, because that is as a member of the public, that's what we have. High demands, high expectations.
Yeah, great. Okay, so that's it. So that's our latest episode of Sold in the Six with my producer, Doug Downs. Now, if you're a real estate agent out there and you're thinking of a podcast, or anybody out there who's thinking of doing a podcast, I recommend that you get in touch with Doug. Aww. And he's with Stories and Strategies. And not only is Doug a producer, but Doug is also a podcast host. So tell us about your podcast, Doug.
Oh, yeah. We have a podcast that goes by the name of the company, Stories and Strategies, and it's about human communication. The good, the bad, the ugly, all that stuff. Thank you for that.
Okay, great. So, and that's what it's called, Stories and Strategies. And it's available anywhere you get your podcast, just like Sold in the Six, Desmond Brown's podcast, and Apple, Spotify, you name it, it's all out there. So, if you liked this podcast today, please subscribe and leave a rating and send it to a friend. And to get in touch with me, you can email me at des@desmondbrown.ca. And also follow me on all of the social media platforms. My handle is Desmond6. And if you're a realtor outside of Toronto and you're thinking of a podcast, call Doug, get in touch with Doug. Or if you need someone to look after your clients that are moving to or from the GTA, that's the Greater Toronto Area, please keep me in mind. I promise that I'll look after them really, really well. Until next time, I'm Desmond Brett.